As Alan frequently notes, the BSO is the finest orchestra in the world. The work they do, the music they create and present is recognized around the globe.
And the man behind the music is the BSO's artistic administrator, Tony Fogg. Tony was born in Australia and was trained as a pianist at the Brazilian Academy of Music in Sao Paulo and the University of Sydney. His career has combined performance with arts administration, and in both aspects of his work, he's been a strong champion of contemporary composers.
He is the best at what he does, and it is always a delight to welcome him back to the program and to be on his home turf. It is always a pleasure to see you, sir.
It's always a delight and a pleasure to see both of you gentlemen here on our turf.
Yeah. So you live in West Stockbridge, do you?
I do, yeah. Everick Road.
Do you go over to the public market there at all?
When I can. I'm pretty busy here.
Yeah,
on
no, I
the
know,
Tangwood
but it's a
campus.
Great, it's a great market.
It's a great little market. It's Thursdays, isn't it?
No, you're talking about the. You're talking about the farmer's market.
Oh,
I'm talking about
market.
The store.
Oh, that one.
I love that store.
Yes, yes.
I go in there a lot.
Yeah.
But so when you go in, you're a very famous man. Do they know who you are? Can
they do not, thank heavens.
I saw the governor in there one day, and I don't think they knew who he was.
Unless I got a discount for being, I don't know, whatever I am.
A regular customer.
A regular customer.
Yeah. So, well, that brings up an interesting point. So, like, your average day, as you say, you're busy. You're mostly here. So, the average day, you arrive what time in the morning here?
I was here a little after 8 this morning.
All right.
And I'll be here leaving till about 10:30 tonight. So
at the end of the concert.
Yeah, yeah. So, this weekend, I'll go to 6 concerts and 2 luncheons and a couple of meetings, but that's about average, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's there are worse ways of making a living, right?
Far worse, yes.
So when you go to the concert, where do you like to be in one particular spot?
Well, I did have the same seats for 22 summers, and I've moved this summer just to a slightly different location, just because I thought it was time for a change. But I always listen from the same spot, and that's actually a good thing, you know, Jim, because you get a constant sense of perspective of how things sound, how the orchestra sounds, how the other aspects of the presentation look. So I tend to prefer that than moving around the shed or the Ozawa Hall.
But Joe's asked a very good question here, because I think, you know, the idea that there are different perspectives, and you may miss something if you're in the same seat.
Yeah, but I prefer just the consistency. I know some people like to sit on the keyboard side so they can watch a pianist's hands do all of the
I like that.
The gymnastics. I prefer to watch a pianist's face, which I think is far more revealing than watching their fingers. So, look, it's a personal matter.
I don't think so.
and do you is it optics and sound, or are there points where you can just close your eyes and just listen?
I can easily close my eyes and listen, and I often do.
Why not play a record?
Because there's no comparison.
No.
Is this something you get out of a live performance that you don't get out of?
Absolutely. The perspective and the sense of community. You know, listening to an orchestra play is one of the great communal experiences. It's a sort of ritual.
You're exactly
that
right.
We are all there gathered, and there you have this group of 100 people with the most incredible precision and unity of approach and thought coming to, you know, it's this fantastic energy of those two, you know, the performing artists and the listeners. Meeting in this big space. So it's one of the things that's great. That's one of the great things about what we do.
And you take a treadmill test every once in a while. The reason I say that is because you are more challenged than anybody. Somebody is going to, each summer, it's already happened here, is going to cancel on you. And you got to find somebody, and fast.
It happens. It happens. Very good.
Yeah. But now, when you look at the, and I'm curious as to, going back to the earlier point about sitting and listening and closing your eyes, is there a point, are you on the clock at that point? I mean, you're working to listen to what's going on and for the consistency of the orchestra and so forth, but is there a possibility to also enjoy and be entertained and put yourself
yes.
in the audience's
of course. And,
seat,
and
of course.
You know, I'm transported like I hope everyone else in the concert hall is, but not surprisingly, I'm always thinking about some other aspect of it, whether
sure.
that was the right choice of program or whether, you know, the circumstances for the artist were as good as they could have been. Did we do create the right conditions for all of those sorts of things? Or I'm thinking, worrying about something for next summer, which is here on a piece of paper. So all of that. It's a very active listing process for me on many levels.
So how long in advance, you've got this little list down here for next summer, how long in advance do these people are very much called for, right?
Yeah,
so these
well,
are the great stars.
We're in pretty good shape for next summer, and we already have elements of 2018 in place. 2018 is going to be a special summer for us because it's the 100th birthday of Leonard Bernstein. And so naturally, we'll be doing some big celebrations here at Tanglewood, including the official 100th birthday concert on August the 25th. But right throughout the summer, we'll be having an emphasis on Bernstein's works and his activities, his teaching, the many dimensions of his artistry. And I'm happy that this is going to be something that throughout the Berkshires we'll be celebrating. We had a very, very productive meeting back in May of a lot of the participants in the arts field here in the Berkshires, from the theatres to museums, colleagues in radio, and libraries and so on, to talk about how as an arts community we could share in the celebration of someone who was a very, very important figure here in this community back in, between 1940 and 1990.
Do you maintain a residence anywhere else in the world besides the United States?
Australia. I still have a house in Australia.
Do you expect to go there if Donald Trump wins?
Well, I am a U.S. citizen, and I would be very loath to give up citizenship, but we just have to see what happens. Focus on how music and art can relieve us and lift us above all of the hurly-burly of politics.
Have you ever seen Trump at one of your performances?
No, I can honestly say I haven't.
Yeah. He would be fairly easy to spot. So, Joe, I'm sorry.
I think he would be. When you think of the programming, and I think we've discussed this before, but I am interested in the, are there any rules in programming here that are different than the rules in programming in Boston? And I know sometimes there's a crossover and you have a successful program there, you want to bring it here, but are there things, rules of thumb, you say, okay, this is a Tanglewood rule, this is a BSO Boston
Absolutely.
Rule?
Well, look, the most practical rule is whether a program can be adequately prepared on the very short rehearsal scheme that we have in place here. The broad structure of Tanglewood, of the concerts, is what it is. It's developed over history. We have three programs each weekend over 8 weeks. There's essentially two rehearsals of 2.5 hours dedicated to each program. So part of my job is to come up with repertoire that we think is physically and musically possible to prepare to the very high standard that the orchestra aspires and maintains on that amount of time. And it's a lot. You know, there's a lot when you have three programs. Fortunately, you know, there are some exceptions to it. This weekend, for instance, the Tanglewood Music Centre Orchestra has its big program in the shed on Sunday afternoon, which means that there are two programs for the BSO to prepare. One of those includes Mahler's Great Ninth Symphony, which I think Andrus has probably spoken about. And that was a piece that we played at the end of the Boston subscription season. Then we took on tour. We played it 6 times around Europe, including in the Musikverein in Vienna, which was a very moving experience. That's where the Mahler Ninth was premiered. And so it's very much in the minds and fingers and hearts of the players. So, you know, this weekend, even though they have two big programs, it's slightly easier for them. It's two programs rather than three. It's the Mahler Ninth, which they have very much, available.
Do you have, just on that, but one of the programs you have coming up is the All Brahms program.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you come in and you say, okay, this is what we want to do. We're going to do this piece, and this mm-hmm. piece, and this. These work together. Mm. They. You feel that they work together. I assume you work with Maestro Nelson's on that, and that comes through. At any point, does it go through the collective minds at the BSO of, oh, okay, will this sell tickets?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I have to have to think constantly about, you know, the appeal of a program, and I'll seek advice from my colleagues in our marketing department who are, you know, very, very open to musical innovation and variety of programming. But, you know, I'll often at an early stage say, look, I'm thinking of this. How do you think this will work from a box office? And they'll say yes or no. And they've got very good instincts about those sort of things.
Great question, Joe. My question is this. When I go and I look up at the orchestra, they change. There are fewer violinists or there are more violinists. Somebody looks like the concert mistress in one, but not the other. How does that all work?
Well, you know, there are certain works that require a slightly smaller string section.
Sure.
You know, a symphony by Mozart. Oh, this tonight's program is a very good example. We have a Mozart piano concerto, which doesn't call for big forces. So we'll have a reduced string section, whereas Mahler Ninth Symphony calls for everyone.
When you say calls for, does the composer indicate what,
yes,
what they need?
Yes, composer either specifically indicates or the period of composition and the general parameters of the piece make clear that it needs a big, luscious string group to
sure.
perform this work. So the string players are under a lot of pressure. They have millions of notes to play in the course of a summer. It's physically very demanding. So we try and give some respite as we can. We roster accordingly. So you may see that the concertmaster for the concerto is Tamara, our number two concertmaster, and the symphony may be Malcolm Lowe, our principal concertmaster. So it's a matter of our personnel office at the beginning of each season sets it up so there is, you know, some lightness in their schedule just to stop from overwork and potential injuries.
Fascinating. One more, Joe, and then I'll leave it alone. But before the orchestra begins, there is this sort of organized chaos as everybody is rehearsing a little bit. What's that all about? Are they tuning, or is it only just tuning, or are they practicing a passage that may be difficult?
Little of both. You know, I mentioned the two rehearsals of 5 hours. That's not at all to even touch on the amount of individual preparation that each of the musicians does at home.
Sure.
When they're not here in the shed, they're often at home working on the music, so they'll come and they can seem like it's just there at the fingertips, but that's the product of a lot of hard slogging. And so typically they'll be tuning, warming up their instruments, warming up their bodies. They may be going over a passage that needs to be just taken at a slow tempo one more time to really settle it in their minds and their bodies. And then when it comes to that spot in the rehearsal, they'll be ready to deliver a certain passage with fluency and virtuosity.
Thanks.
Tony Fogg is the artistic administrator of the BSO. Very nice to have you with us. It always is.
It's always a great pleasure, and I do thank you for your great support.
Thank you very much.
On air and off air, we appreciate it here at Tango.
Have a beautiful rest of the season. Thank you very much.
Again,
you can find out more information about all the wonderful programs that Tony mentioned, tanglewood.org. You're listening to the Roundtables live broadcast from the grounds of Tanglewood on WAMC.